and welcome to episode 154 of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today we have just one segment for you and then a bonus segment. For the regular segment, we have Neil, Alex, Mike, and Zach getting together to talk about Smash Brothers for 3DS. And after that, for our bonus segment, myself, Nicholas, and Amanda get together to talk about the current season of Doctor Who and how it is going. Enjoy.
Hey everybody, and welcome to that big-ass connectivity segment where we talk about Smash Brothers on 3DS. Woo, 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 woo!
Smash!
I'm Neil Ronahan, and with me to talk all about Smash Brothers on 3DS is Zachary Miller.
You!
Alex Kalafi.
What's good, my Nintendo fans?
Oh, wow. That was close. That was almost restart the episode kind of close.
But not quite!
And we also got Mike Sklens.
Yay, it's me.
So we've all been playing the living hell out of Super Smash Bros. On 3DS for almost a week, or at least the North American version. I did have my little foray into the Japanese version, which just involved me playing through things and unlocking things and being like, huh, I wonder what that move does. Huh. Now it's pretty cool to actually know what those moves do.
Yeah.
I guess, Zach, let's start with you, because you're displayed on the left on my Skype screen. How are you liking Smash Brothers so far?
I love it so much. I am constantly shocked by how much there is in this game. Like, you could never run out of things to do or things to collect.
Well,
I think there reaches a point in the game, and I guess maybe I'm a special case because I did kind of have the joy of unlocking the characters already when I had played the Japanese version, but playing the North American version, kind of my goal going in was, because I don't speak Japanese, so the challenge wall was just nonsense to me. I went and did the challenge walls, and
I'm doing that too.
For people who don't know, there are three challenge walls in total. Yeah, you only have one at first, and I think there's like 35 panel or something like that. And the challenges are kind of cool at first, and then you get to that last panel, and it's just like beat classic with everybody.
Yeah,
beat
play
forever with everybody. And I'm getting to the point where, like, I feel like there could have been, like, a third and a fourth challenge wall before you got to the actual third one. That's just like, I don't know, just do everything. Like, it's not really that exciting. You can brute force it. Who the fuck cares?
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that's really kind of standing out to me is the thing that bugs me, because kind of the way to victory in that is just sheer repetition. It's not even skill.
Yeah.
There's a couple of them. There's a couple of them that are skill, like beating Classic on 9.0 intensity. That's going to be a bitch.
Yeah.
But a lot of them are just like, I don't know, play Smash, run a lot, you'll eventually get the powers, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think the goal of something like beat Classic mode with every character, I don't think the goal of that is to get you to sit down and do it in as little time as possible. I think the goal of it is that eventually, at some point in your lifetime of owning this game, you're going to knock that one off.
Yeah.
So six months from now, you'll still get a sense of accomplishment.
Well, what bugs me with that is then, like, I wish it was spread out more, because, like, those first two challenge walls didn't take too long to get done, right?
No.
I guess 10 hours or something.
I'm still
like that,
working on one or two of the second ones.
Yeah, I'm missing, like, the 10-hour smash total on the second one. But then the third one, it just all, I don't know, finish everything. And it's the one thing that's standing out to me that bugs me, because I kind of, outside of multiplayer, like, I might be done with the game.
Oh, wow. Man, I can't get enough of Smash Run. I play Smash Run all the friggin' time.
Yeah, I saw you mentioning that on Twitter earlier. Why do you like Smash Run so much? Because that's kind of the weak link to me.
No, it's like different every time you go in. And every time you go in with a different character, you customize them a little differently. Almost every class of character has a different loadout set.
But it's the same basic map every time, isn't it? I mean, there's
it
different
is, but who cares? I mean, it's different enemies and you get a different mix of powers, and it's fun to find new challenges, and man, I just can't get enough of it. I love it to death.
I just started digging into Smash Run, just yesterday, really. I played it probably like 15 or so times, and I think I played like once or twice the day the game came out, and I was like, oh, this is a thing, because I just wanted to try everything.
Yeah.
And I don't think I quite got it. And then I started going through it with the same character over and over again yesterday. I kept going through it with Pac-Man and trying to, like, it's a good way to, like, train yourself on how to use the characters, too, because you get to fight all the different enemies.
it's like a way more interesting training mode in that sense. Like that's actually, I did the same thing with Pac-Man.
Because... And I like that it's full of all these mini challenges. Like you go into the door and there's like, do this one thing, or you get on one of those platforms that shoots you way up into the sky and you have to take out so many dudes. I really like, I just like it. I think it's neat. I like the fact that you can like, if you're good at it and you're careful and you don't die at all, you can like supercharge your character to these absurd levels.
And you get so much stuff coming out of the game.
Yeah, you unlock a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
But see, I feel like that's almost like luck of the draw.
Well, who cares? That's what makes it good.
But when you're actually trying to unlock things, it's really frustrating.
Okay,
because
sometimes you
get duplicate powers.
Of course
who
you do.
Who the fuck's great idea was
I'm not trying to unlock shit.
And I literally got three of the same fucking Pac-Man power up when I went through it one time.
Yeah, I've got
up one and up two. No, it was like all down three.
Well, it's supposed to be like loot, you know, like some loot is common and some loot is rare.
Yeah. I totally see it as a loot game. I mean, I can't get enough of it. And honestly, Neil, if like the repetition of Smash Run is your biggest complaint, this game is still amazing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm still loving the crap out of it. I mean, they made Smash Brothers work on the 3DS. It's just that there's certain things, like, I guess, as someone with an eye towards trying to get that challenge wall, like, I'm nearing a point where I'm just like, well, fuck it.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess if you're a completionist, you're gonna hit a wall in this game where you're like, oh, this is just a grind. I'm not a completionist. I don't really care if I ever complete the challenge wall. I just like playing it, and I think it's really good for just picking up and playing. I was surprised I liked it as much as I do, and now I'm a little worried that I might end up liking it more than the Wii U version when it comes out.
Yeah, I really like
it.
Because
I can always have it, and I can just, what I've been doing is I've just been leaving the game on and putting the 3DS in sleep, so I can literally just open it up and play it.
Same here.
That's the one thing that I love about it, though, is that it's like, oh, I'm gonna go to bed. You know what? I'm gonna, like, do a run through classic mode before I go to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because all the modes do kind of, like, you know, what classic mode is, 10 to 15 minutes, maybe, if that, and Smash Run's 5 minutes plus whatever the challenge is. Everything's kind of designed to work really well.
The challenge
isn't
more than probably 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the most is like, it's a fight that's 2 minutes long.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's a regular fight, then
And I did, so the one thing that I haven't really done that much is play online, but I played a lot locally. Over the weekend, I had a bunch of friends over. We actually had 6 3DSs in the same room. With people playing, like, we actually, like, had, like, oh, I'm gonna start up a game of Smash Run, guys, and a couple people would jump into that while other people were playing Versus. And it was really special and incredible. And, like, that's kind of... I didn't think that Smash 3DS would work that well as kind of a couch multiplayer game, but it really worked well, because everyone could just kind of, like, go off and do their own thing at any point.
Yeah.
Yeah, my biggest disappointment with the game is that Smash Run is local only.
I know, that is
a
shame.
It was really fun. I played it with 4 people. It was a lot of fun.
It just seems like it'd be so much fun to play with other people. And you know, I'm 30. I'm not hanging around with a ton of people who have 3DSs. I'm going to get very...
You know what, Mike? You're not that much older than me. And I hung out with 5 people who had 3DSs last weekend.
I don't have any friends with 3DSs. That's my problem.
You have to do what I do and get them all hooked on Tamagotchi Life, and then they all buy 3DSs.
That's true,
basically what happened.
So the reason Smash Run I don't think could work in an online environment is because the arena, I think that's singular, used for Smash Run is so big that if you tried to get more than a handful of people playing it, like, with the internet having to keep track of that at the same time,
it's
I feel like it would run super slow. Yeah.
I mean, it's basically an instance, but yeah, Nintendo doesn't have the server capability or know-how to put something like that online.
I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to get it online, but...
I bet they tried. You could do it in a way like everybody does the maze themselves, and then the final thing, whatever it is, a race or a fight, is the online part, you know?
So it's just completely independent, and then eventually it turns into a
fight. But you can run into each other in the maze. That's the thing.
I love that part. When I played it with people locally, I just hunted other people down because that seemed fun.
Yeah.
And I started off being super fucking negative about this game, but pretty much everything that I described that I didn't like, that's all that I don't like about the game.
Yeah.
It's just a few, like, niggling things, like, things that aren't even that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things, because, the basic game just feels so good on the 3DS.
I'm surprised at how really good it is.
Yeah, I was like Melee. I was worried at E3. And I think actually, I think Johnny Metz made a good point when the demo hit, where he made the point that the 3DS version is way more appealing when it's not right next to the Wii U versions and all your friends are there.
Yeah.
Because when you, like, you know, at E3, you know, they had, you know, demos for the Wii U version and demos for the 3DS version. Which one do you think is going to be more fun?
Right.
Especially when you can, you know, go and grab three other people from NWR and go play the Wii U one and have a great time. Or put on headphones and go be yourself in a 3DS version.
Yeah.
Just in general, though, like, I know the controls work, but the fighting is tremendous in this game. Even though, yeah, it's Smash Bros., like, especially with the new characters, like, Little Mac is probably one of the most satisfying characters I've ever played in a fighting game. As is the Villager, as is Greninja, as is the Duck Hunt.
What do you mean satisfying?
Alright, so Little Mac is the best example of this. Little Mac, when you connect a Haymaker to an opponent who has 90% damage on them, and you just see them go soaring, there is nothing that feels better.
Then how does that work for the other characters?
For when you do multi-man melee, and you do Little Mac's running smash on them, and just keep knocking them out one after another.
But can't you do that with, like, every character? I mean, I
know what you're talking about. I love
Little Mac. No, I mean, I love Little Mac, and he is very strong, but I know, especially because I did the 10-man melee for every single character to get the challenge. So I played that with every single fucking character. And every character has, every character except for maybe like two or three does have that move where you basically just like go and barrel into the multi-man me characters and then they just fly.
No, but I know Little Mac about, does it like an infighter though. Like his make sounds too, like especially when you connect the KO to an enemy and it does that little ding.
And the zoom.
Yeah, it's not something that, it's something specific to Little Mac where it's just this crunch, like, it's, I don't know, it's almost like when you connect on a Falcon Punch.
Yeah, like that lightning strike that happens when you hit a good smash and someone flies off.
Yeah, that's a cool
effect. That's something that's like, it's a very small touch, but I feel like that might be part of why things are so satisfying, because you have that better visual indicator of like, oh man, I just landed this great move, look at this like bolt of lightning that just erupted from my punch.
Yeah.
It seems like a good substitute for Rumble.
You know,
all the new visual stuff they're doing.
You know, I haven't even used Little Mac, and that's my one complaint about the game is there are two friggin' mini characters.
That's the dumbest complaint ever.
Well, no, it's 51. Like, if you want to get through the game, if you want to complete that challenge, like you say, and play as every character through classic mode, it's going to take you forever.
Yeah.
Well, who have you guys been playing with mostly?
Little Mac's been one of my favorites. I only started playing more as Bowser Jr. and the Duck Hunt Dog recently.
Dog's so good.
I was kind of focusing on other ones. I think Samus is a lot better in this one.
Yeah, Zero Suit Samus is who I've been maining. She's really good.
Yeah. And I've been playing a ton of random, just kind of going through everything.
I've been trying to master a couple of the new characters.
Pac-Man. I know, Mike, you were talking about Pac-Man.
I love Pac-Man.
The first time I played Pac-Man, I hated Pac-Man. And then I started using Pac-Man a little bit more. I had a run when I was playing random where I think I got like Pac-Man 2 out of 3 games. And by the end of that, I was in love with Pac-Man.
Pac-Man is so good.
So much fun to use, too.
I love he's got the ghosts. The smash attacks have good distance because he's got the ghosts that pop out, and then he's got that fire hydrant move that you can just drop on somebody.
Yep.
It's so
and I
good.
Like the fire hydrant because it just goes in the middle of the stage and it doesn't even damage anybody. It's just annoying.
It's just annoying, yeah.
Yeah, and then Game & Watch was my favorite in Brawl. If I had a main, it was Game & Watch, and I don't think they really fucked him up at all, so that's cool.
I tried to main Rob a lot in Brawl, but I never really got into Brawl. There was something that just felt off about it, so I think I'm going to try and revisit Rob, because this game feels a lot closer to Melee to me.
Yeah, it seems like a good balance between the two. I also like Robin a lot.
Yeah, I've been using Robin a lot, too. I just picked Robin at random just to see. I was just trying all the new characters to see what they're like, and I was like, oh, Robin's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it because it's like he or she, depending on what you pick, has a kind of like PK fire style move. You also have that charge attack with the lightning attack. And then you have Nosferatu.
The Nosferatu move,
which is like that really like, it's like this weird healing move that I think it works where like you can do it in a person in front of you, but if their back's facing you, then you do more damage or like
if you get them from behind. Interesting.
Do them in the butt.
I like that the game pops up these random tips while it loads because it's and some of it's like really nuanced.
That's
like,
actually, that's literally how I found out about Nosferatu doing
that. Like there's a different tip for each one of Pac-Man's different fruit, like his bonus fruit move where it cycles through all the different fruit. There's a tip explaining how each piece of fruit acts because they're all like, different.
It's so cool. It's so cool.
Just to touch on the veterans while we're talking about the characters, they changed the shit out of a few of them. Specifically, Luigi is now a completely different character than he was in Brawl and Melee. And Ganondorf, they make him a little bit better so he's not complete garbage. Yeah. And they play with his strength and they make him feel a little bit more different than Ganondorf. Captain Falcon. Captain Falcon feels way better than he was in Brawl.
Well, Captain Falcon was nerfed to high hell in Brawl. Like, I loved playing as Captain Falcon in Melee, and then in Brawl they just made him a piece of shit.
They really nerfed Pikachu in this game. I'm so disappointed.
Oh, yeah, Pikachu blows. Pikachu, once again, one of my favorites in Melee. In Brawl, a little bit worse. In the new one, terrible.
His thunder's awful.
Yeah. But how did they change Luigi? I don't...
So Luigi, I guess I'm talking specifically about one move, or at least two. Okay. Did he always have the Super Mario Bros. 2 style jump in Brawl?
Yeah.
Where he does the little flutter?
He did.
Okay. So what about his up B move where he does like the little fire punch that's like super strong?
I feel like that's new.
He always had that, but it only did damage if you connected with it just right.
So maybe they just gave it more of a visual cue, because he always had that, like, that spike where if you timed it just right, you'd knock him out, like, rest.
Right, but this time, if you see when he uses it, whether he hits it or misses, he falls to the ground, and, like, he hits his head and he has to get up.
Yeah,
he did that in Brawl.
Like, that's a completely new animation. Okay, so that's completely new. So maybe Luigi didn't change as much as I thought he did.
But Ganondorf, I think they just made him less stupidly slow.
Yes.
He's still really slow, though. Stupidly slow.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, but he's also one of the strongest characters in the game.
Yeah. I like what they did to Bowser.
Right. Bowser's like almost top tier now.
I mean, I don't even know what the competitive tiers are. That shit's gonna change.
Do you want me to
like,
tell you?
It's pointless, because by the time this goes up, those tiers are probably gonna change.
Right.
I will be watching the Smash Brothers 3DS tournament that they're hosting in New York this weekend. I will be in attendance. So look for my ass on Twitch while you're listening to this, I guess.
I really don't like Mario's new down special, the flood attack. It's just...
That's from
it
Brawl.
It doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
That was terrible. I'm glad that Dr. Mario retains the spin move.
I'm so glad that Dr. Mario's back, because he was always my favorite Mario.
Yeah. Dr. Mario's way better than Mario.
Did they change him notably this time? Like, I did use him a couple times, but he seems mostly a clone of Mario.
Yeah.
He seems like Mario in Melee.
Okay. Yeah.
That's as far as I can tell.
Exactly, I don't know.
Yeah.
And as far as clones go, I know people are all pissed off about Dark Pit, which I need to point out that
Dark
the Japanese
Pit is garbage.
In the Japanese version, Dark Pit is just called Black Pit. which like, when I saw that, I was like, no. Like, you guys can't be real. Sure enough, go to check
Dark,
out
yeah,
any
but
video.
What is the deal with Dark Pit? They didn't have almost any clones. Even Dr. Mario has a different move set than Mario. But Dark Pit is just fucking Pit.
Yeah. Well, he does have different moves. See, this is the thing. This is the thing that everyone keeps on being like, oh, he's just exactly the same. But he's kind of not. Like, he's a little bit more powerful, which is, and I mean, he's still a clone at the end of the day. But it's more of like a Fox Falco thing, as far as I can tell. His side B is way cooler and does like electrical damage. And his
final
smash.
But isn't it the same move with just a different animation? They both kind of rush forward with like an attack.
Yeah,
move.
I mean, but then again, isn't that the same with like Fox and Falco?
Yeah, they're the same.
And Mario and Luigi.
But I guess the difference is that Fox and Falco are different. Like you can even with Olimar, if you cycle.
Somebody
through, you can
didn't
be...
play Kid Icarus Uprising.
No, but what I mean is, why they're not physically different? They look identical. Like.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that Robin is a male or female, and you cycle through the costumes, and some of them are male and some of them are female. Even Olimar, you cycle through them, and some of them are Olimar and some of them are Louie. With Bowser Jr., you cycle through them, and you get all the different Koopa Kids.
Yeah.
Why does Dark Pit get to be an entire different character? Why isn't he just a
because
different character
Because he has different
inside
abilities
of Pit?
And moves? Yeah. No, I mean,
they're trying to fill out the roster.
It's also
it's just
Sakurai
gives
Lucina,
Pitt some extra love. That's all it is.
It's also why Lucina is a character and not just a skin for Marth. Like, they are different characters.
But the thing is that they look different. Pitt and Dark Pitt look the same. They are same with different clothes.
I agree with you, Mike. I think it's kind of a dumb clone.
Just specifically when we're talking about clones, I haven't used her yet, but since I'm sure you guys have, does Lucina deserve to be her own character? Just based on what you've used.
It's kind of like a Marth Roy kind of thing, although not entirely that way, but, like, she does control differently. I mean, and, like, it is the kind of thing where it's like, you know, the tip of her blade does more damage, whereas Marth's base does, or
the other way around.
I'm not sure.
I haven't.
Tip, and Lucina deals even damage no matter which part of the blade you hit them with.
Oh, okay.
I haven't played as any
like
Fire Emblem characters yet because fuck that game.
You should check out Robin. Robin's really cool.
Yeah. Right. But no, I mean, if we're going to be all pissy about Pitt and Dark Pitt, then yeah, I guess we should be pissy about Marth and Lucina because they are very similar.
I guess. I don't know. But I think the real reason
and
that
Link
Dark
and Toon Link are basically
the same Sakurai.
Thing. Yeah.
It's because
I do like Dark Pitt's final smash is just Zelda's.
Really?
It's kind of humorous because I was like, oh, it's just gonna be Pitts. I'm like, what the? This isn't that. I hate in a way that they changed up some people's final smashes because like I was playing as a DDD and he had like that like the derpy final smash in Brawl where he'd just like dance and then like shit would fall.
Right.
But now he's one where he sucks people up. So I'm playing as DDD and I use his final smash and I just fuck it up because I expect it to be the one in Brawl.
Yeah.
I like that Pac-Man Final Smash where you turn into giant Pac-Man and you eat everyone and they turn into the ghost eyeballs. That's great.
You know, some...
And you get arbitrary points for it.
There's a real inconsistency in the Final Smashes that I really don't like. Some are really powerful, like Pac-Man's, and some are, you know, really narrowly powerful like Zelda's, and I wish they were consistent across the board or not there at all.
The difference with the Final Smashes is that the ones like Pac-Man's, you know, okay, yeah, if you suck, you're gonna get eaten, or if you're not expecting it, you're gonna get eaten by Pac-Man. But if you know that it's coming, it's actually not that hard to avoid. But then you have ones like, you know, like Zelda's, or, I mean, there's a ton of ones that just have that, like, you need to sit right in front of a person and time the Final Smash.
Right.
Those are usually almost guaranteed
instant KO. Almost.
Sure. Unless they're very low percentage. Like, I think I landed, like, the Link one. And it was like right when someone came back and they bounced but then came back but they had a lot of damage done to them. But yeah, the ones that are harder to land usually do way more damage.
Yeah. True. I like the Duck Hunt Dog one. We have to, if you hit it just right, the ducks swoop them up and then they get shot by all the NES Zapper characters. That's great.
Yep. Which, and that one's just kind of like almost, it's just, Captain Falcons.
Yeah, I guess
that's right. Yeah.
Just visually different.
But
whatever, it's awesome.
One thing I wanted to touch on a little bit is the customization, because I didn't care much for it at first, until I started playing with the Miis, and I started making some ridiculous customizations.
Yeah.
For instance, I put one of my Miis in a mech suit, and then I basically put extremely powerful, like, brawn power-ups on him, to the point where he'd have, like, 100 attack and, like, negative 80 speed in defense. And he just started wrecking people left and right in classic mode. But apparently those don't, like, fully count in your classic mode.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, defense. You don't need to play as the Miis in order to unlock any of those, as far as I know. Because I've unlocked them and I haven't played as the Miis in those.
So it's like a side
You can do that with the other characters. I actually made a Little Mac of Doom. Where I just made him super, super powerful, and I used him against some friends last weekend and pissed everybody off because I just basically sit there. I couldn't move that fast, but if I hit you, you died.
Yeah, like 40 damage for like a smash attack at a certain point.
Jesus.
The best was landing counters.
Yeah, I haven't messed with the customizations outside of the Mii fighters. At all, but I have looked because I've collected some gear from Smash Run, like different alternate attacks for people, and I want to unlock them all. The one thing I'm finding surprising is that I'm not really playing with Mega Man at all, and I think it's because I played almost exclusively with him and the Villager in the demo, so I haven't really played with either of them at all in the final version.
It's also because Mega Man sucks in this game.
No, I think he's pretty
wild.
He's bad.
You just have to learn how to use him. He's pretty good.
The
he's
thing with Mega Man
guy.
Is he's all distance, and Smash is a game where most characters yeah. spend a majority of their time up close. Very few characters are really seriously ranged characters, and Mega Man is almost entirely range attacks.
Yeah. yeah.
So you have to play him totally differently. You have to get that, you have to do some damage with your other stuff, and then you have to build up the Buster Smash. But that, the Buster Smash, even his Smash attack is a projectile that goes halfway across
yeah,
the battlefield.
Yeah, that's what I don't really like about him. It doesn't jive with the way that I play Smash.
Yeah, you have to relearn him. You have to relearn yeah. how to play the game entirely to use him.
That is, although you did make the comment about not playing as Mega Man or the Villager. That's, like, I still love the Villager.
Villager is great.
Villager's amazing.
I just having too much
I
fun
just don't play, yeah,
Villagers.
I'm playing every other character because I played so much of the Villager during the demo.
Yeah, Villager, Killager, the Killager is amazing.
I love the Killager.
I love getting that tree planted and then just running around and axing people because it does
yeah,
so much
yeah.
damage.
That's the best. So is there any, well, I guess, have you guys gotten online at all? I haven't really done that within the
yeah,
North
I've,
American
I've been
version.
Playing yeah. with some Twitter people and with Nicholas Bray, and I've had really good experiences. I've only had one kind of laggy match.
I played the first night the game came out, and it was pretty laggy across the board.
Yeah.
But I expected that. I didn't play it. A couple days later, I played a game with Andy Gergen and TYP and someone else who I can't remember. And we played. It was fairly stable. There was a little bit of lag, but it was all right. So that was pretty fun too. And it was really fun to be able to pop online with your friends.
Yeah, and actually have it work.
Yeah,
and actually, yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping it gets better as time goes on, and it's less like congested all the time. But I really haven't. Every time I hop online, like every time I open up the game and I know I'm going to be playing it for an extended amount of time, like 20 or so minutes or more, the first thing I do is check online to see if any of my friends are online, and you guys are never there.
Yeah, what's up with that? You guys are never on when I'm on.
Yeah.
Well, it's because when I play,
you're
all in
4 hours from the past. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Most of the time that I've been playing, at least outside of like the Saturday when I played with friends, is usually when I'm at work and I'm not online. I'll play on my lunch.
I've been bringing it with me to work and playing it a little bit sitting there on my lunch break.
Me too.
And then I work at a university, so it's usually good for picking up like 1 to 3 street passes. I got 10 the first day I brought it, just out of nowhere.
Nice.
So that was great. And I like the.
Wait, is it 10 in Smash Brothers or just 10 overall?
10. I think it happened to be both, but Smash Brothers maxes out at 10.
Okay.
No, it was 10 overall. Two of them were Smash. Two of them were people who had Smash Brothers.
Okay. The Street Pass game is not bad in this either.
It's
yeah,
not bad.
I actually,
it's, you know, it's
I have a lot
easy
of fun
as all
that.
Hell, but it's fun and it unlocks stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
You get loot for it, so that's nice. And it's really easy to win, so it's essentially just a free loot engine.
Yeah. I do like the trophy, the trophy rush.
Yes.
My method for that is using Donkey Kong and just ground pounding.
I haven't done the trophy. I haven't done the
trophy
rush.
I use Pikachu and just abuse thunder.
That could also work.
I haven't really done Target Smash. I haven't done almost any of the mini games.
I went challenge hunting. So I have played Home Run Derby.
I did Home Run Derby and I did Target Smash. I did them once each. I haven't done Trophy Run.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to get to that.
I have a hard
do that through the trophy menu.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think that, you know, for as much as I love Sakurai's menus, the UI on this game's bad.
No.
Yeah.
Because it's just like you don't know where things are. It's like the Mario Golf UI all over again.
Why is Smash Run
nothing's that bad
on the front page? That's what I don't get.
I think it's because
is the exclusive mode.
Yeah.
I guess.
Whereas I think that the games and more, like all that shit's also gonna be in the Wii U version.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that there's a mode for the Wii U version they haven't announced that
would
be like
there must
equivalent
be.
To
yeah.
Smash
there's
the one
be.
The one really ballsy thing that I really hope they do because I want to see them use the gamepad somehow is that amidst all those ridiculous leaks and they have been teasing bosses a lot, like they had Metal Face from Xenoblade,
Ridley,
and there was another, and I guess like Yellow Devil and the Find Me boss, although that wouldn't be in the Wii U version. But they have been teasing bosses a lot, and one of the leaks that I saw, which I don't think was one that was ever proven, so it could have just been horseshit, but it talked about how there would be a five-player mode in which one person would control a boss on a stage.
That's interesting.
Five-player mode, one is a superpowered character. That's interesting.
I really hope that that would happen, because I'd want more multiplayer games like that on Wii U. And I think that would be really neat to have as an exclusive mode and maybe build something more substantial around it. But
I feel like they have to announce something.
Yeah,
otherwise,
like there is,
otherwise
there is
there's no
something.
Reason to get it over this over the 3D.
Yeah.
Like, if it's the 3DS version minus Smash Run, why do I want that?
Well, I mean, there's definitely going to be something. We just don't know what that something is. Whether it's like, oh, it's adventure mode for Melee and it's back. Like, I don't know.
So what do you guys think of one thing that is exclusive to each version of the game is the set of stages. What do you think of the stages in the 3DS version?
It's hit or miss.
Some of them are
like
good.
Like, what is up with the Gower plane?
That's terrible.
I think it's a really interesting stage. I don't like playing it that much, but I just, like, the design of it is
You're all jammed up on the edges of it the whole time. It's, like, half the time I'm off the screen. It's so weird.
I don't like the amount of moving stages. I don't like Mushroom Kingdom that much.
Yeah, I hate moving stages.
I don't like the 3D Land one. I do really like Magikant.
I
mean,
great.
The music's fantastic. I love the Flying Man showing up too.
Can someone explain to me how Jungle Japes keeps getting put into Smash Brothers games?
Yeah, right.
This fucking dark ass level where I can't see shit.
Yeah.
It's in every
I always
of the
fall
game.
In the damn water, especially on the 3DS version.
I don't mind the water. I just hate that they never once lightened it up. It's impossible to see what's going on.
Does Donkey Kong not believe in electricity?
Why can't they just set it in the middle of the day? Why does it have to be sunset?
I mean, Neil, that's their advantage. They don't need electricity. They don't need
I like that Tortimer Island has got like the random kind of random element to it where the trees are.
Yep.
That's neat.
What else is there? I'm not wild about the Tamagotchi life stage.
Yeah,
the Nintendog stage is the bane of my existence.
Yeah.
Whenever I play that, a fucking burger lands on me. It's terrible.
I like the Pac-Man level.
Pac-Man level is really cool.
And I really like the Reset Bomb Factory a lot.
I hate that stage so much. Whenever I do random.
I'm tired of it. I think I kind of maybe got burnt out on it, but then...
And I kind of, like, I don't know. I didn't initially like the part where all the platforms are all over the place, but I think I kind of like the Reset Bomb Factory now.
I miss the old Pokemon Stadium. I don't like this new one.
Yeah, but you've got.
Well,
I was going to say the new Fire Emblem Stadium is basically
that. Arena Ferox is like I thought it was Pokemon Stadium one time when I was playing it. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What other stages are there?
Rainbow Road. I like Rainbow Road, even though it moves
Rainbow Road's
around.
Pretty cool.
I like
that F-Zero stage is the shit.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yep. I like that one.
And the Game Boy one is neat. It goes against my
the
not
Kirby
liking
one?
Moving stages rule, but it's such a neat
stage. Yeah, the Kirby
stage.
One's pretty good.
The Kirby one, yeah.
Well, it's one of those moving stages where it moves for a bit, but then it stays in place.
Yeah.
I don't mind that. It's the levels that constantly scroll, like Mushroomy Kingdom. I don't like Golden Plains.
I hate the Game & Watch stage.
Golden
that
Plains is fun because of all the coins that you can collect.
I guess that's kind of a neat aspect of it.
Yeah. But. And, like, I almost wish it stayed in place, though. But
why does it need to scroll? That's what I don't get.
Yeah, well, because they need more coins.
Just have them respawn faster.
What do you guys think of the Mega Man one?
I hate it. I hate it because
I don't like it either.
Devil.
I don't like dealing with the Yellow Devil every time.
Yeah.
I wish you could turn off the Yellow Devil.
I don't like the Yellow Devil. He makes the level too much of a hassle.
Good music, though.
I like the platforms coming in on the sides. That's really cool. Maybe if the Yellow Devil only showed up once.
Yeah. But he's like always there.
He shows up like every minute.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like the Find Me stage, you have the enemy comes up, but it doesn't seem like it happens that quickly.
No.
And it's not as encompassing, like the Yellow Devil sits there, he takes up half the level, and then he shoots shit.
The Find Me stage is just boring.
Yeah. I mean, you can always free your me. That's fun.
That doesn't do shit.
I didn't know you could do that. I like the Paper Mario level, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, that reminds me a lot of the Zelda one. Windfall Island, was that what it was? I don't know. The Wind Waker
theme
one
of the Spirit Train level is pretty good.
Spirit Tracks, you mean?
Yeah. It's very condensed. Gerudo Valley's cool.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Although when the bridge falls, I usually
feel like I'm always on the bridge when it falls.
Well, it's got those little platforms down there you can land on.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
But then, like, you'll hit an ice spike or something.
Yeah, yeah. What is with the ice spike? That just appears out of nowhere.
It's the witches. What are their names? They, oh, okay. They, one side is fire and the other is ice, and they randomly, one side gets covered in the element.
Am I the only person that, whenever I play Smash Brothers game, I kind of just want to replay every single game from all those characters? Like, I was thinking about, like, we were just talking about Zelda. I'm like, man, I could replay Ocarina of Time right now. Or I could go play Super Metroid.
Oh, that
I
way.
Speaking of which, hate Brinstar. So tired of that stage.
Oh, yeah. It's just like Jungle Japes. It's dark and shit's happening that you can't see. And, it's tiny.
I actually, like, what are they had the one in, I'd rather have, I think it's the one in Melee, the Norfair one where it's, like, rotating.
Yeah, that was good.
Like, I like that one more. Craig came up
and smashed the stage once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll put some, I'm sure they'll put some of those into the Wii U version, because they're going to have a totally different slate of stages for it.
You guys might have answered this already, but who's that asshole in the Earthbound stage who comes and beats you up?
The Flying Man.
Oh, fuck him.
He's great. As soon as you see him, you got to run over and tag him and put him on your team. He's kind of like an assist trophy.
Is that how you do it?
Yeah, whoever touches him first fights for them.
Yeah.
He works like an assist trophy. You can
kill him if he's.
I know
that's what I
always do when he shows up. I'm like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah, you gotta run and tag him.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm very happy with this game.
Me too.
I think I'm surprised at how much I like it.
I think it's something that I'm just gonna be playing on and off for a very, very long time.
Same.
I'm very glad I downloaded it, because that sure as shit ain't leaving my system.
Yeah, I downloaded it for that very reason.
Me too.
And it is something that pretty much every single person that I know with 3DS has this game.
Dude, so I went to the Moose's Tooth to pick up a pizza, and the guy was like, you're a little early. I said, oh, I'll just sit down here. I brought my 3DS. He's like, did you get Smash? I was like, yeah, I did. I sat in my car for an hour before I got in here just playing it. I was like, yeah, dude.
I had to get a flat tire repaired, and this past weekend, and while I was waiting at the mechanic, guess what? I just played Smash.
Yeah, that's I
played Smash at the smoothie place. The guys were like, are you playing Pokemon? I was like, no, dude, I'm playing Smash Bros.
I had a flat tire a couple months ago. Unfortunately, there was no Smash yet, but I was playing 3DS while I was waiting.
I think the way I look at this game is as very concise. There's not a ton of content, in my opinion, when you look at it just as a list of bullet points. Like, within 3 hours, you can get a good taste of pretty much everything that's in the game. However,
but then you're just scratching the surface.
That's where I'm going. After those 3 hours, after I was a little bummed out on Twitter, like, there's no adventure mode, even on Melee level, there's no events, I played for another 12 hours just dicking around and doing that same stuff over and over again. Which I think is a testament to the fact that, yes, even if there is probably less content in this game than Melee, I might argue, the fighting is so good, and the fighting is maybe so much better, that the content that is there never overstayed its welcome. It was still just enough for me to just keep fucking playing over and over again, because every character is just so good. All the fighting is so good. It's so much better than Brawl.
It's so much better. Yeah,
it is a very good game.
It's a game that I'm surprised I like it as much as I do in a portable format, because it's a game that's always been on consoles, and you think, it's a console game. It's a console game. But it turns out that Smash Brothers is actually incredibly well-suited for a portable system.
Even
it's
if it's
so
pushing,
perfect.
It's pushing that little puppy all the way to the limit, though.
Yeah, it is.
But it runs great.
So much so that they're making a new one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that just about does it. That is Smash Brothers on Nintendo 3DS. We do have a release date for Smash Brothers on Wii U. It's coming out in North America on November 21st, which, that's a big surprise.
Yeah.
No one predicted that one. Are you guys all down for Smash on Wii U?
I'll wait for reviews to see what's different, because I'm still skeptical of the idea that these are two very different games. I know the stages are going to be different and there's going to be one different mode. I still think these games are going to be super, super similar.
Sakurai's also made comments that the challenge mode, like the challenges on the Wii U version, are going to be a lot harder. And that there is, he has alluded that there is going to be more substantial changes, but I guess we'll see if that's actually true. But I know that the challenge mode thing was something that was very clear, like, the ones on the 3DS one are going to be different from the ones on the Wii U version. The Wii U version ones are going to be more difficult.
Interesting.
We'll definitely see. It's just like, I'm just so skeptical, because we haven't heard anything about that version, really.
Yeah, they've been obviously hyping the 3DS version.
We will very, very soon.
Like maybe in a Nintendo Direct of sorts.
I mean, I did have that dream a couple nights ago where for some reason it was just a Nintendo Direct October 16th. So
I'm actually surprised putting money that on that more one. Information didn't come out alongside the release date.
Yeah.
Like
some
big feature reveal. That's surprising. So I guess they're obviously saving it. They'll probably reveal it a little, probably pretty soon, because we're almost maybe a month away from release is when they'll really drop some big stuff.
Yeah, I have a feeling we'll see something at the end of the month at the latest. But yeah, that's Smash on 3DS. And if you have any questions, send them in, or comments too. Send them in to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com.
Yep.
Thank you for listening, and talk to y'all later.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Alright, and that will do it for episode 154 of Connectivity. As always, you can send your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You should be sure to rate and review us on iTunes if you haven't done that yet. And follow all of us on Twitter. Go to nintendoworldreport.com and look for the Twitter sidebar on the right-hand side of the page, and you will find all of our usernames there. And now stick around and enjoy a bonus segment all about Doctor Who.
So, you recognize me then?
You're wearing a different coat.
You saw straight through that.
Deep cover. In my school. Why? Where's the teeth? What have you done with him?
He's fine. Hypnotized. He thinks he's got the flu. Also, a flying car and three wives. It's going to be a rude awakening.
It's aliens. Oh, my God. Is that why you're here? Are there aliens?
It's assembly. You better get going. Go and worship something.
Are there aliens in this school?
Listen, it's lovely talking to you, but I've really got to get on. I'm a caretaker now. Look, I've got a brush.
Doctor, is there an alien in this school?
Yes, me. Now, go. The walls need sponging and there's a sinister bottle.
You can't do this. You cannot pass yourself off as a real person among actual people.
I lived among otters once for a month. Well, I sulked. River and I, we had this big fight.
Human beings are not otters!
Exactly. It'll be even easier.
Okay, one question. And you will answer this question. Are the kids safe?
No. Nobody is safe. But soon the answer will be, yes, everybody is safe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this bonus segment of Connectivity. I am Scott Thompson. Today, I'm with Nicholas Bray.
Hello.
And Amanda Albert.
Hello.
And you know, if you hear these voices, then that means it is time for some Doctor Who talk. Officially, we haven't been back since we had our little discussion about the season opener. I guess, what, a little more than a month ago now? Something like that. Unofficially, you heard us all on episode 150 when we did our Doctor Who radio play.
What? That wasn't us. What are you talking about?
Don't know what you're talking
people
about.
People from the year 2040.
That is absurd. If you enjoyed that, you can thank Nicholas Bray, who basically wrote the whole thing and, kind of came up with the whole idea of it. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. So. Hopefully, people enjoyed that. I didn't really hear anything either way, so
people must have just shut it off at the beginning, thinking that you've stuffed up the editing on it.
Some weird error. Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I didn't hear anything bad, but I just said maybe people didn't get it. I don't know, but hopefully someone thought it was funny.
Why are you instigating this? Don't do this.
Don't even bring it up.
Don't prompt them.
I did hear from a British guy that's in Australia that I sort of speak to. He's on Twitter. I don't know if you talk to him. And he's like, yeah, your British accent was okay. So that's a success.
Your British accent
from
was okay.
From a supposed British person.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take it. That's a good
Who knows
review.
If he's lying?
I wish, like, I'd see that quote, like, on a movie poster. The British accents were okay. Says so-and-so of the Times.
A supposed British.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's actually Canadian.
Supposed expert. So the season, of Doctor Who is now a little bit more than halfway over. So we're gonna go ahead and talk about a little bit about the past episodes, and then a little bit more about the most recent one, Kill the Moon, because it was pretty awesome and it's timely since it just passed. And then, give just our thoughts about the season so far as a whole. I know I've been pretty impressed, but we'll get to that in a minute. So let's start with Into the Dalek. That was the second episode of the season. Which saw the return of a timeless foe, for the Doctor, but kind of presented it in a new light. What did you guys think about this episode? don't jump
was,
out at once.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I wasn't like over the moon with it. It's like, I just thought, yeah, pretty solid episode. I wasn't like blown away or anything.
You know, I always liked Inner Space.
Yeah, right? It felt very inspired by that.
Yeah, wasn't Steve Guttenberg in that?
Was Steve Guttenberg in that?
I think so.
Was he? He wasn't the guy piloting. He was the guy who was being invaded.
We got this thing, this magical thing that can tell us.
You do that.
Did you guys never see Inner Space?
No, I saw it, yeah. The guy gets shrunk down, goes in the guy's body, he's in his little ship. Yeah.
But Dennis Quaid, damn it.
I was going to say, I didn't think it was Steve
Guttenberg. Seemed bad enough that Steve Guttenberg might be in it.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, Nicholas. Like, I enjoyed this episode really more just because, like, of what the little developments it gave for the Doctor, which I think kind of carry on throughout the season, as we'll talk about. But just sort of the way he let that that first soldier die. I can't remember. I think it was a dude soldier. I don't think it was a lady soldier. Well, but, you know, just kind of was just like, you know, stay still, you'll be fine. And then, of course, you know, the soldier wasn't fine, and he knew that was going to happen and didn't really
try to intervene. He couldn't save him, so he was just, like, trying to save the rest of them, basically.
Right, buy them time, yeah. Which I think is, like, a theme throughout this season so far.
The theme is themes.
Yep. There are themes at work. Yeah, but he was very, like, pragmatic in that way and just, like, instantly cut his losses and, like, that guy's done for. Let's get out of here.
The Doctor is more disconnected, I guess, emotionally from sort of the humans and that. Like, whereas 10 and 11 were more, like, they seem to care.
And 9,
more.
Even 9.
Even yeah. 9, like, yeah, even 9.
His
this
empathy.
Doctor's going back to sort of the alien, he doesn't really quite understand why people would get upset over trivial matters, and, you know.
It's more than just being an alien. This Doctor, I'm not saying I dislike him, but he's definitely a dick. He is, like, it seems like if he's saving someone, it's not purely to be good. It's just a circumstance of him making a point over and over. Mm. Like, he just doesn't have the empathy. Like, a lot of the time in the past, when he made decisions to help people, it's because he felt for them and he cared about them. But it's like every fucking episode somebody dies and there's not even a reaction. He would at least, even in the past, if he didn't care for the person, at least be manipulative to act like he cared. This one doesn't even care.
Like David Tennant, if he had been in this episode when that soldier had to die, first he would have tried everything possible to save him, and then he would have just said how sorry he was, like,
and
for
5 minutes.
And
then he would have cried.
Yeah.
One solemn tear.
Right, and he would have said he's sorry, he's so sorry.
Raining.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then they would have found a way to bring the soldier back to life at the end.
Yeah. I will say I do like that people are actually just staying dead this season.
For sure, yeah. They kind of break it a little bit in episodes to come that we'll talk about. But for the most part, they do stick to that, and I like that. You know, the whole thing was that the series, you know, this year was going to be a bit darker, and I think that they've really held to that.
I think they've really held to saying it's going to be darker.
Yeah, that too.
It's funny because everyone's been clamoring for a darker sort of take on it, but then they come out with this sort of pretty dark take on it, like as dark as they can probably take it with still sort of sticking within guidelines. And people are like freaking out going, it's too dark now.
Well, right,
I think
yeah.
Their complaint is they don't mind the Doctor being dark, but don't just make it fucking dark for the sake of being dark. Let there be some substance, some motivation as to why. Which,
We haven't got that yet.
I know
yet.
We're getting,
yeah.
I know, I, the season isn't over, so it's hard to like assess so you have the full picture.
That's my biggest thing with this season. Like, I keep waiting until like I see the information to come in to sort of really judge
right.
it.
Well,
I have a feeling
we're not
going to know about this doctor and what like his full thought process until this season's finished. It's going to go right up until the last episode.
And you know it's going to definitely deal with Missy and like the whole heaven afterlife thing. I mean, like that's like it's not a coincidence that all these characters are dying and there's this subplot about this place where they're all going. Like we're applauding the fact that people are staying dead, but it's very possible at the end of the season the doctor does
they
something.
All fucking live.
Yeah, exactly. Like I would not be surprised if that's
everybody
the case.
Lives.
I guess yeah, so we should hold off patting them on the back for that quite yet.
Watch, it'll be like he acted like he didn't give a shit, but he really did, but he knew it would be fine all along. That's
right.
Why
or,
he was a dick.
Or what if he had to let all those people die so he could find this afterlife place and now he's gonna save all of them? Like what if it was his plan all, you know, like it's gonna be something like that. Where,
I'm interested to see how they unfuck this whole story.
so that's into the Dalek. Let's just move on because we've got plenty to talk about. So the next episode was Robot of Sherwood. To me, kind of one of those episodes where it's standalone, kind of throwaway. Like, I enjoyed it. There were funny moments. I liked the repertoire between the Doctor and Robin Hood.
That scene in the dungeon was great.
Right, with them just, like, it was basically like a dick measuring contest. I mean, they're constantly one-upping, trying to one-up the other and, like, come up with a plan to save them and all that kind of stuff.
Completely. And then as soon as they are, like, think they've settled who's the boss, it's like, oh, you neither one of you were ever in charge. It's her. See ya.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that coming when the guard came. Yeah. I was like, it's going to be Clara.
Oh, yep. You knew it was coming the moment the camera so panned into that shot. You're like, these two are going to be assholes and she's going to look like the better person.
But I really liked that episode, actually. Like,
I thought it was fun.
I enjoyed that episode more than, like, Into the Dalek or Deep Breath. Just, like, it might not be as good, like, story-wise or, like, technically and stuff, but it was just more enjoyable overall to me because it was... I really like it when the Capaldi Doctor is funny. Like even if the Doctor's not trying to be funny, it comes you know, he's written to be funny. I really like his humorous stuff this season.
Yeah, he's fun to watch be snarky, and it's also I love watching him like stalk around and act like he's the only one that knows what's going on and being
right.
very smug about it.
And he just seems always so, like, unimpressed with everyone else.
Right.
You know, like everyone else is just sort of bugging him. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that really came through, and I did enjoy that in this episode. Now, we talked about this off-air, and I should have gone back and found where I actually read this little kind of theory or just observation. But we talked about this when we were recording the stuff for episode 150. But someone kind of posited that Robin Hood was sort of supposed to represent like the David Tennant / like Matt Smith Doctor, the sort of gung ho, always happy, laughing, very excitable, positive person. And then you've got the current Doctor who's very much the opposite of that, and they were kind of butting heads.
See how they would be together.
Right, yeah, and I thought that was kind of, it juxtaposed just exactly like how different this current Doctor is. And I liked that.
There's a lot of self-loathing at work.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so it was good, you know, it probably
and,
one of the,
Mark Gatiss got in a couple of, Pertwee references, which was always fun.
Yeah, yeah.
He did the karate chop and he mentioned the, mini scope.
No, oh, yeah. So that was good. One of the better, like, standalone kind of silly historical episodes from like the past few seasons, I would even say.
It was probably like, because I went into the episode with pretty low expectations because I don't really enjoy the Mark Gatiss ones. There's something about his writing that I don't know. Like I don't mind them.
It's very on the nose.
I don't mind them, but there's something about him that doesn't quite click. But this one worked for me somehow. Except yeah, maybe the ending. The ending was a bit weird, like with the golden arrow workmate. Sticking to the side of the ship. They could have maybe come up with a better reason, but... Yeah.
No, totally stupid, yeah. Although I did like that it turned out that the Doctor was cheating.
That was great.
To win the contest. Like, that's so good.
Yeah, when I was watching him do that, I was like, oh, come on, he couldn't possibly do that. And then at the end it was like, oh, that makes sense. That was heaps good.
And
he's
if you had said that to him, he would be so insulted, too.
Yeah.
I know, he, like... At the time, if someone called him out on it, he would have been... You caught I'm cheating? No, I never cheat.
Look at these eyebrows. Are these the eyebrows of a cheater?
Exactly it.
Yeah, so that was a really good touch. I like that. And just how kind of like bashful he was at the end to admit like, oh yeah, I can't save all of us right now
because
I actually...
Yeah, because everyone was looking to him like, okay, you right. can do it, right? I cheated.
Right. I like that. I like him kind of appearing
he
somewhat
was never
going to
say otherwise. What?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So that was good. Yeah, that was a nice touch. So the episode after that was Listen, and I think this has been like one of my favorite episodes so far. Explicitly because it like, it finally does what I've been wanting Doctor Who to do for so long, and that is like have an exposition heavy episode in which like by the end, the little like monster of the week could have very well like not even been real, you know, but you had so much character development. Like I really like this episode.
Yeah, I agree. And it's nice that they just didn't even show you the monster.
Right, like yeah, if this had been past Doctor Who, at the end it would have been some monster, the Doctor would have, like, finished it off in 3 minutes and that would have been it. And it would have
his
been, like,
home planet was destroyed and now it's living here.
Right, yeah, exactly, or they would have come to terms and be like, oh, he's friendly, he's okay, like, let's leave him alone. But I love that, like, it was just sort of ambiguous. But in sort of that journey, you learned so much about, I mean, the Doctor, Clara, you know, Mr. Pink, everything, like, it was awesome.
And that speech he gives at the end, too, man, about being afraid.
Yeah.
So good.
Like, when I was watching that episode, I was like, oh, yeah, Scott will like this, because that's what we've been talking about. It's just, this is an episode for character development. And it's something, Doctor Who doesn't really do. And the backlash... There was a bit of a backlash with this episode because I listened to like three different Doctor Who podcasts, and like one of them is like sort of, I think all the like participants are over 40. There's another one where it's like they're in their, I think they're more like closer in their 30s and they're all women. And then there's like another one where I listened to that's a bit of a mixture, I think. But there seems the old guard, like the older people over 40, have a real struggle with like Doctor Who not having a monster. Like one of the guys on the Doctor Who podcast was like adamant that it was like a terrible idea because the Doctor Who is meant to have a monster. Doctor Who is meant to have like a scary threat or something. I was like,
it's capable of so much more than that, though.
I know, and like this guy he's so adamant that the Doctor Who format isn't as wide open as you know people like to think it is, but. It's so limiting, like, if you have to have a monster all the time. Like, I don't understand it. Like, it's one episode.
Did you guys ever watch a lot of The Twilight Zone?
No.
Only bits and pieces. I mean, I've seen a fair share of episodes, but that's definitely like, not all of it.
That's, like, one of my favorite shows, and that's one of the things that makes me watch Doctor Who, is because anything can kind of go. If it's a good story and it makes you, like, a little... scared, or if it has some kind of twisted parable, then that's good enough for a story. So sometimes there's a monster, sometimes it's really cerebral, sometimes it was nothing at all and the person was freaking out for no reason.
Yeah.
But it all makes you like question human nature and how they react in different scenarios. And that's to me like what it is. It's not the focus of the monster, it's how the people react to the monster and how they work together, whatever it is. You know? So as long as Doctor Who is exploring that theme, how people are interacting and treat each other, what they have to do to solve whatever the problem is at hand, then that's it.
Yep.
It's good enough.
I agree. Yeah, I was like, I read some things online, like you were kind of saying, Nicholas, like where people were upset. It was like a bait and switch, or the ending didn't pay off, you know, like, well, what was under the blanket? You know, it's like, it doesn't matter, you know, like, that wasn't the point.
They said it was a kid. That was the explanation. It was a kid mucking around. Like, it wasn't meant to be
the master.
A monster. It was Rory as the master, yes.
Right, exactly. And, like, you know, people have said that. It's like, no, that's great. Like, I mean, I love that it turned out to be nothing, but you got all this, all this character stuff. And that they even brought in, you know, like, the, you know, the unnumbered doctor, you know, and him coming back to that.
Well, that was Little Hartnell.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Little Hartnell. That's right. Yeah. And it tied in, you know, that,
and it turns out Clara was the monster under the bed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, for two, yeah, for both the Doctor and for, yeah, for Mr. Pink. So both of them, which is kind of cool. So,
it also, that also reminded me of, in the last Christmas episode, you know, the beginning of that started with her saying, there's a man that's up in the clouds that keeps all the children from having bad dreams.
Oh, yeah.
And just going back and thinking about that, it makes you think like, well, of course he'd go and try to protect children from having bad dreams. He's duking something out with himself when he's doing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I felt like it was kind of cool to see them tie back to, you know, the past couple seasons.
Yeah, it makes some of the things that kind of fell short, like, you're like, okay, that's interesting, but I don't quite understand what the character's reasoning was doing. It's nice to at least see in the writing that they're lining some of that stuff up now.
Right, whether or not that was the plan all along, who knows, but it's nice that they're making that effort.
Right, it makes me feel like they at least give a shit to some extent about continuity.
Yeah, and you know, like, I mean, we'll get there. I think it was this Kill the Moon, or maybe it was The Caretaker. I kind of watched him, like, back-to-back because I was busy and missed The Caretaker for a few days. But jumping ahead a little bit, but the Doctor even mentioned River in what do you guys remember? Was it the last
caretaker.
Episode?
It was The Caretaker.
It was The Caretaker. That's what I thought, which I thought, like, oh, wow, like, I thought for sure, like, all the Matt Smith stuff was just, like, done now. Like, they weren't going to mention that, but I like that he brought up River.
Oh, yeah, they're always going to reference that character to some extent. That's a huge part of that Doctor's life.
Right. I thought that was cool. And there's more in that episode, too, that kind of references other stuff. But before that, we have Time Heist, which I think was another fantastic, like, standalone episode.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah, I felt like it was fun to watch. It definitely didn't break any ground. Like, you knew immediately going in how it was all going to end. As soon as you saw that monster, you're like, oh, yeah. But it was still really fun to watch it unfold.
Right, and of course, like, you knew the architect more than likely was going to be the Doctor, you know, as things were going.
Oh, yeah, he kept talking about how he hates himself. He's like, oh, yeah, of course.
Mm. I really liked the cold opening of that, though. I like how there's never been any trouble when you're just picking up a phone and they cut straight, like, to the hard cut, and he's got the worm, and it's like, it was so funny and unexpected, because I was like, yeah, he's just going to pick it up, they'll go to the titles or something.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, it surprised me a little bit, which was good.
That was cool, yeah, it was a really slick opening. The whole episode, like, was really well edited that way, I think. It was very, like, it was very tight, I mean, and it definitely evoked feelings of, like, Ocean's 11 and that kind of stuff, like, these heist-type films.
And for an episode that was set completely in studio and, like, inside of a bank, it really, early on, it really made it sort of sold the feeling of it being on an alien world. Like, sometimes you get these, like, oh, they're on an alien base, like, on an asteroid or on something. Like, it never really feels that way. Like, somehow...
Yeah, it always feels like you're in a soundstage.
Yeah, like, somehow, maybe it's just those few shots of the, like, you know, the planet of the bank and all that. I don't know. Something about it sold it better to me this time around.
Well, and it felt like a lot of the time when it's supposed to be an alien world or an alien ship, you can just tell by the dimensions of whatever place they're in. It's obviously a soundstage. It's been dressed. But in this, you know, certain shots they do, it seemed like the room was endless. Mm. So you just didn't get quite the same closed set kind of feel to it.
Yeah. And then you got that little... shot it right at the end of the creatures waddling off into the distance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was kind of funny.
That reminded me a lot of Hyde, too, the whole premise of going and helping the monster. That,
In Hyde, I thought it was, because I originally watched that episode again, and I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot there's, like, this bit tacked on at the end where it just feels out of place. I should have just cut that out completely and left it ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, there's kind of a weird loophole because it's sort of like, well, how did she have the number if they hadn't been, you know, like there's a weird kind of timey-wimey, loophole.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Like. Missy, somebody gives the number to her. I totally forgot about that.
Right.
Oh, yeah, the woman in the shop that Clara mentions in, the Missy. Bells of St. John.
Right. Yeah.
Which is probably Missy, yeah.
I would think so. Yeah, I think they're going to finally tie that all together.
Yeah.
So then the next one was The Caretaker, which was another good one, I thought. Like, some good character development.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, the Doctor finally meets Pink, you know, that the whole relationship comes out. I love, love, love that he assumed that Clara was into the guy who kind of looked like Matt Smith.
Yep.
Yeah, that was hilarious. That was so good. And, one of the podcasts I listened to, like, one of the people arguing that that wasn't intentional. I was like, how can you not?
Shut up.
How can you not think that was intentional?
For
sure. That was the whole point of that joke. Like,
I also love that the Doctor has face blindness pretty much with everyone. Like, he keeps saying shitty things to Clara about how she looks. He can't know, you know, give anybody credit if they're attractive. But as soon as somebody sort of resembles him, face blindness is totally gone. He gets it. It's like, really?
When Clara walked off with the 11 lookalike, you could see it in his face like, oh, Clara, you had to go and find my old self, didn't you?
And even the way she talks about it, like, you know, you're smitten with a young time traveler, you know, or like something like that. Like
he reminded him of a certain dashing time traveler.
Yeah. Like for sure, that was, I mean.
And he thought, my blessing because it's sort of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's like, she asked him, is it okay? And he's like, oh, yes, it's okay. Yeah. It's all right. I don't mind.
I know, it felt very much, like a dad letting his daughter go on her first date and, like, meeting the guy and, like, that approval, that, okay.
Oh,
like,
it's so creepy when you frame it like that.
But it really was. I mean, that's what it felt like, you know, and he's like, okay, like, this kid reminds me of me, you know, like, that, you guys will be fine. Go on, like, have fun.
I'll just live vicariously through him fucking you.
I don't think it's like that.
Hey, one of his, the most recent episode, Kill the Moon, he's like, gives a throwaway line like, and no hanky panky in the TARDIS, which is hilarious.
It's I think of at least two companions that broke that rule.
Yeah, well, look what happened. They created a Time Lord TARDIS baby, so.
Yeah.
But in the Caretaker, the opening scenes of that was so funny. He's like, I'm going undercover. I'm in the disguise. You won't know I'm there. And she's like, Doctor, it's you. It's like, you recognize me then. I'm wearing a different coat. Yes.
Yeah. I love it
when he talks about living with the otters, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was really funny, too.
You can't pass yourself off as a normal human being. I lived with otters once. It'll be much easier.
Yeah.
I also want to know what the fuck him and River were fighting about that he had to go live with otters for a month.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that was really, there was a lot of funny, just funny stuff from that episode. I really enjoyed that one.
I also really like where Danny's character is going. Like, the more you see about him, one, I want to know who the fuck he killed. Because he's really screwed up about it.
We know it was someone innocent.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a soldier. Like, they established that. I'm imagining probably a kid.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah. Like, because there's a lot of stuff going on with Danny that, like, haven't been shown yet. Like, there's a whole side to him that sort of they tease at. Like,
I don't think we're gonna know till the end of this series.
No, yeah, I think it's gonna be something that's sort of revealed at the end somehow.
But I feel like we'll see it. Like, I feel like somehow they'll travel, you know, they'll travel back to when Danny was a soldier and see what happened.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that will open, like, Clara's eyes to sort of his, you know, what he's going through and why he always gets so, like, friggin' emotional anytime she mentions him being a soldier or, like, killing,
And I think it was interesting. There were some people that were like, there was some backlash about Danny saying that, like, he was being manipulative of Clara by not wanting her to travel with the Doctor. But, like, to me, it's like, anyone in their right mind wouldn't want you traveling with him. That is some dangerous shit. Especially when you're also not being honest about even traveling with him. Like,
right. I feel
anything
like,
could go wrong.
Yeah. No, I feel like as, kind of like surreal and silly as Doctor Who can be at times. I feel like these past two episodes, they've done a really good job of like trying to establish actual like reactions to like the Doctor's actions.
Yeah, that it's not all fun, you know?
Right. And I think they're doing a good job of that. You know, people like in real life, for sure, Danny would probably go crazy, call the police, you know, something. You wouldn't like not do anything. But I think within the context of Doctor Who, like they're really doing a good job of him having a reasonable reaction to the Doctor.
Yeah.
And then now Clara, you know, at the end of this most recent episode too.
Yeah. And it just goes to show you, like, it's definitely not for everyone, even in that world. Like, most people, when they find out about what that's like traveling with him, they don't want to go for it. And at least not for an extended amount of time. I mean, it takes a certain kind of, nut to be willing to go and do that. And you just kind of see in the caretaker, like, she's a little crazy to be doing that.
And that's, I think that's why, Courtney was there, and like that scene at the end was to sort of emphasize that too, because she's like, she's not made out for traveling in the TARDIS, really, even though in the very next episode she's back on it, but
yeah, so apparently they were still trying to travel together.
Yeah, but it wasn't her idea.
No, she was sort of forced into it, I guess.
Right. But I liked that, I mean, we'll go ahead and jump to the next one now. I liked that they brought her back, and that, like, they were still basically, like, I mean, the doctor was sort of using the school as his, like, like, fort at that point, I guess, or, like, hideaway. I mean, the fact that the TARDIS was still there and he was still taking Courtney around, like, I thought for sure once the caretaker was over, like, that was it, school plot over, like, let's move on. But I like that it sort of, it felt like there was some continuity there, you know, it picked up and it kept moving, and it, like, established a little bit of, like, actual, like, permanence, you know, for the doctor and his interactions within the school. So I enjoyed that. Yeah, I really liked this episode. I thought it was another one where you had a lot of, character development, especially late, in the episode. And I really enjoyed the way it was shot. Like, I thought all the moon shots and like, a lot of times the monsters and aliens in Doctor Who look kind of lousy, but I thought everything came together really well in this one. Like, I really enjoyed just watching it.
Yeah, they did a good job.
So yeah, what did you guys think? I mean, I don't know if there's much to really talk about, like, in the beginning and middle of the
It reminds me a lot of Waters of Mars.
Yeah. I even wondered if he was going to kind of reference it when, she said, like, there's no water on the moon. you know, it made me think of, yeah, Waters of Mars. But it did feel like that. I agree. It had the same kind of vibe.
Can I ask you guys something about this episode? Cause I wonder if it's just me. The conundrum that they're faced with, it felt so much like the conundrum of, like, and you can cut this out if you guys want. I don't know if you want the podcast to go there or not, but I kept thinking about abortion the whole fucking time.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I don't think Yeah, because people have been sort of talking about that online and stuff, and some people deny it's in there, but, like, it's so blatant. Like,
yeah, you think so?
Yeah.
There were, of course. Like, she even,
Clara even says, well, are you going to, like, kill the baby or something, you know, like.
Yeah. Oh, they keep referring to it as a baby, yeah.
So, her perspective is that, like, to let it live, like, I guess at the cost of, like, possibly killing everybody on Earth as well. Though, but.
Metaphor?
Yeah. No, that for sure was there, and I felt that too, like, right away. I was like, oh, this is, like, a thinly veiled, like, discussion about abortion all of a sudden.
Yeah, like, I thought when I first watched it, like, am I just looking for that, being a girl? Am I being more sensitive to that? But then I asked Mike about it, and he thought the same thing.
Even with the doctor saying, like, it's a decision for womankind sort of thing. Like,
yes, yes, exactly.
And then removing himself from the situation completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what do you guys watching that, him removing himself from the decision completely, what do you guys feel was his motivation for that, from what you can
I think
interpret?
His motivation was what he told Clara, basically. I think he was being truthful at the end, saying that he was, like, he was trusting her because he knew that she would, like, make the right decision, and, like, giving her the responsibility. He thought he was, like he said, like, respecting her and stuff. I think he actually does believe that.
Oh yeah, like, he says as much. Like, he thought he was giving her this great opportunity that, you know, to, like, to do something important.
Yeah.
And he really thought, yeah, he was doing something great. And that's what I like at the end of this episode, is you get Clara, like, having a reasonable reaction where it's like she had all this responsibility thrust upon her, this, like, grave decision that could, like, dramatically change the course of humankind, and she freaks out and she doesn't want it. And she doesn't appreciate that the doctor just abandoned her like it was a game.
Yeah. Well, like, I get the impression that a lot of the time when he acts like he doesn't want to be involved in the decision, it's more out of cowardice. And him not wanting to be left potentially holding the bag. But it's very easy then when things turn out fine to go back and see, like, see, it's fine. I knew all along.
Right.
Because there's plenty of times where the good decision has not been made and somebody dies or something like that. But it was, I don't know. I felt like if she hadn't blown up at him at this point, it would have to be coming sometime soon, just over the course of the show, she's been trying to figure out who he is, and he hasn't been particularly pleasant for her to be around. And it's not like, at this point, she's kind of getting the big picture of what he can be, is going to be like from here on out as this person. And I would hope that this, at this point, after her doing this, he changes somehow. Like, he builds that empathy back up.
I think that's the point. I think that was the critical point of this, of this trajectory that this doctor's been going along. And this is going to wake him up. He's going to, like, sort of go, oh, I shouldn't do some things like this. Like, you know, I shouldn't act this way entirely all the time. Like, he's pushed it too far. He took Clara for granted. He's gotten so comfortable with her. He feels like he can say and do anything around her, but he's found a limit to how far that goes. And I think, the rest of this season will be him sort of discovering reacclimatizing himself to, being the doctor and, you know.
And she was so spot on when she said to him to not treat her like all these other little people, because even if he sees other humans like that, she is not every other human to him. She has gone back and saved his ass so many times, and he can't go back and save her ass at least once.
Mm.
Just given, like, you know, she jumped back in there and saved him all those times in all his past lives. And he knows that.
So do you think, I was thinking about this, like Clara's reaction at the end there and stuff. Would she have reacted as strongly if he had said, it's your decision, but just sat in the corner? Like, you're still there? Like, was she objecting? Was she sort of reacting badly to the idea of him not offering, like, the moral support to her and, like, just leaving completely without, you know, being there to sort of at least, you know, just be there?
Well, you know, one of the first things he taught her when he picked her up and started traveling with her is, we don't walk away. And then what does he fucking do right there? He walks away, and he not only walks away from this planet that he supposedly cares about, but this person that has, you know, saved him over and over, and he's going to let a whole race potentially kill themselves? Or let this other thing die potentially at their hands? Like, I get the impression it wasn't that he knew things would turn out fine. I get the impression that, at least with this doctor, it was more to make a point to her and this kid than anything else. And that they're just lucky that it turned out all right and that he could show up back there. Paint it like he knew.
Yeah, but what point would he have been trying to make to her? Like, is it the one that he said, or are you talking about something else?
I feel like with this doctor, every human he encounters, he kind of is looking to settle their hash to start with anyways. But then I think, especially with Clara, he's trying to prove a point. And the point is just basically that he's always right. And sometimes that can boil down into the most, like, juvenile, unempathetic things to do, but, like, I don't even know how to articulate it right, but it just feels like if things turn out good, that's just a happy coincidence of him trying to shoehorn his twisted morality or point of view into it. I don't know how to explain. He's manipulative.
Yeah, well, he did... I guess that manipulation is sort of apparent, because, like, what was the episode? Was it the start of this one where he compliments her on her look or whatever? Like, oh, you look good today. She says, oh, thanks, you noticed. He's like, oh, I just know it works on you. So,
yep.
Right.
He just says things to her because he knows what reaction he'll get out of it.
Right. Uh-huh. It reminds me a lot of a Tom Baker episode where it was him and Sarah Jane. I can't remember what it was, but there was something he wanted her to do. She got scared. She didn't want to go through with it. And so he just started insulting her and saying, like, how she could have never done it anyways. And then that infuriates her enough to go through and do it. And then things are saved.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's right.
But you know what I mean? Like, manipulative in that way of in that same way with Clara. It just, I don't know. I feel like there's a better way to get the thing done than to put people in situations like that.
Mm. I think like this season is about the Doctor recalibrating his moral compass to a degree.
Yes. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And I think it's interesting that in this next episode, the little teaser they showed, you don't see Clara anywhere.
Oh, she's in it.
I doubt she's in it.
No, she is in it.
She is in it?
She is in it?
100% in it.
Let me go back and look.
Really? I don't remember seeing her in the little teaser.
No, she's not in the teaser, but I think she's listed on IMDb in it.
Oh, okay. Well, sure.
I'm wondering if they'll, instead of her being with the Doctor, like they'll just cut back to like a couple of school scenes or with her and Daniel.
Or maybe he'll come see her at the very end of the episode. At the very end
and be like, I'm sorry.
Right.
Nah, not likely.
But too, they did a good job of like illustrating though that Clara really isn't done with the Doctor, no matter how mad she is. Cause, you know, Danny makes the point that like, well, as long as you're angry, then you still care.
Right.
You know, it's not so you're completely just, you just don't care. You know, you're not even moved at all one way or the other. By him, that's when you won't care anymore. So you know she'll get back with the Doctor. But yeah, we'll just have to see how long it takes.
I think she might end up apologizing and traveling a little bit more, but I think she's gonna leave.
Oh, for sure. Which already been talked about that she's on the way out soon.
Yeah, the Christmas special will be her last, but I think I mean leave in the sense like how Martha Jones left. You know, it's gonna be of their own accord.
Right. Not dying, not getting stuck in some universe, not getting your memory erased, like just leaving. Yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting to me. There's very few that have done that, and those characters are always pretty strong-willed.
And what's nice is that leaves the door open to return at some point. If she wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's pretty much it. What do you guys think so far of this series? So far I'm really enjoying it. It took a little while to get started, but I feel like I have a good feel for who the Doctor is now, and I enjoy all the character development. I just think it's far more interesting than like the whole last season of Matt Smith's was.
I agree. And these last two episodes have, really done a lot in the way of, making these characters way more dynamic and interesting to watch.
Mm. I feel like it's all been high quality, but there's nothing that's really peaked and like made me make that like, oh, that's my favorite episode this season. Everything seems like it's either been like pretty good or like average. And I haven't really had that sort of spark of, oh yeah, that was great. I want to watch that again. Mm. I'm still waiting for that.
Did you have any like that last season?
Last season. I guess the last time was probably like Day of the Doctor or something.
Right. And that's special. I mean, I don't even really count that as like part of last season. Cause I mean, that was something like a special event. Because I would agree. Yeah. Like that's the standout from last year.
The other
sure.
thing I would say about the season so far is that I think that the way that they cut things together and put things in, like a lot of the, Missy stuff feels awkward to me. Like, it's just tacking it on the end. And then a lot of the stuff with Danny and Clara, it feels really, like, I don't know if it's just hasn't been enough or it's like, it just feels really disjointed to me. And maybe that's the point, but it doesn't feel like it flows very well.
And it's hard to gauge how much time is passing for them because, you know, she says that she loves Danny. And it's like, well, for us, I mean, they've been dating
I think it's meant to have been like another year has passed.
I think so.
Right, because all the students know about it. I mean, But it's hard to really gauge that. So, like, in my mind, it's like, well, you guys have been dating for like 4 weeks. Let's pump the brakes a little bit there, Clara. You're getting a little crazy.
Yeah, there.
But obviously that's not the case. But yeah, I agree, with you, Nick, about sort of their relationship. Like, I like where it's going now. I like that he's met the Doctor and now you have this sort of conflict there. But yeah, I'm going to need more development out of that, I think.
Like I said, like maybe this season will end up being my favorite, but, I have to see every episode. It feels like that's a requirement to like really judge it and like know if you like it or not.
Yeah. Cause sometimes it doesn't all tie together. To the last two or three, and then when you go back, the story works so much better.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. So thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Nick and Amanda for being here. And, I guess we'll be back, mid to late November, to recap the season. And then of course we'll come back to talk about the Christmas episode, which will be Clara's last episode.
Nick Frost! Said, so.
And Nick Frost, yes, yeah. That's going to be so good.
I'm so excited.
So there you go. All right, we will talk to you guys later.
Bye.
See ya. Bye.